Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind, in which I show how much mind matters. Welcome to part 42 of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I am Udo Staatsgruber and I'm live on air. You can call in at any time with questions and comments on the subject I'm talking about. If you have any questions, comments and suggestions not related to the subject matter, please go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you'll find my email address and then you can write to me. I will reply within 48 hours. The same, of course, applies also if you cannot get through with your calls to this show. On my website, you will find also the last 20 or so recordings of my show and a link that directs you to the Blog Talk Radio archive, in which you will find all my shows, old and new. Last week, I spoke about relationships, and today I will continue with the same theme. We talked about the various reasons why a relationship can become discordant: uprootedness, women falling for bad men, or men falling for bad women. We talked about the many changes that inevitably come as the relationships carry on over time, and we all experience them. I mentioned physical changes. The athletic young man now has a pot belly and a receding hairline. The curvy young girl still has curves, but they slammed in different directions. Changes in status, changes in health, midlife crises, and many other changes that can challenge any relationship. We also talked about the probably most common reason why relationships can become discordant, and that is the couple just can't get along together. The underlying reason for it is also change, but change even more subtle and underhanded than the ones I mentioned. Little challenges that the couple allows to slip by without identifying them and deal with them. They tend to grow and become big challenges and become a disturbance in the relationship. And then the couple still doesn't deal with them. Eventually, they can become the reason for dramatic actions like one or both partners seeking happiness elsewhere. I have said that relationships never stay static. Change is constant, consistent, and continual. There's nothing more permanent than change. We all experience challenging changes, so why do some partnerships overcome them and others not? Well, in my opinion, the most important reason is the bond in a relationship, whether the bond is a strong or a weak one. A strong bond can overcome all these changes and challenges and grow even stronger than before. A weak bond will break the relationship. What does it mean, strong bond? How do we define it? Well, love plays a big role in it, for sure. But in my opinion, perhaps even more important are mutual respect, tolerance, and acceptance. How do we stimulate a strong bond and with it a meaningful and loving relationship? Last week's talk I ended with bad communication in a relationship. So today let us begin with the more positive part of our chat: good communication and other good things. And yes, troubled relationships can be repaired and then well maintained, provided that both partners want this to happen. More often than not, in particular relationships that have run their course, that are worn out, we find that communicating with a partner, talking about the problems, could have repaired the relationship. Many people who were or are in such a situation could say now, but I have told him or her, we talked about it many times and we fought over it. The point is that the communication needs to be constructive, with one particular outcome in mind, and that both partners want to find ways to achieve a positive outcome. This can be only achieved if the conversation about it does not end in an argument. And by far, most conversations of this kind end in arguments. Arguments achieve nothing positive. They only exacerbate the bad situation. What begins as a conversation that wants to bring about positive change usually turns to blame shifting, to mudslinging, and ends yet in another fight. What our couple really should do in order to repair a troubled relationship is to agree to leave all the causes for the troubles where they belong, in the past. I am assuming here that before it comes to this kind of conversation, there were already arguments and fights over real or perceived hurts and disappointments. It is absolutely pointless to rehash the same over and over and over again. And this is exactly where most attempts to repair a relationship fail. The recipe for success is to agree to leave the past where it belongs, and that's in the past, and no longer drag it into the present. This is essential. Then there are only two questions to be answered by our couple. A, where do we want to go in our relationship? And B, how do we do it? How do we go about it? Whenever the past intervenes in the conversation, stop, step back, think about what you want to achieve, and then start again. If need be, wait for an hour to continue, or a day, or however long it takes, but under no circumstances end the discussion with an argument. This is extremely difficult, I know, because anger, fear, frustration, disappointment, and sadness will intervene. And these feelings will make it almost impossible to continue this kind of conversation in a calm, reasonable and constructive manner. My recommendation how to overcome this particular challenge is to have a mediator present, a counselor or a therapist, definitely not a family member or a good friend, who will inevitably take sides. The task of the mediator is to only keep the conversation on track, to stop the conversation turning into a discussion, turning into an argument, to stop blaming one another, to stop mudslinging, to stop threats, and to stop tears. It is definitely not the mediator's job to judge and to take sides. Is it difficult? Yes, it most certainly is. But it is, in my opinion, the best way, perhaps even the only way, to protect the relationship from falling apart. However, if it's too late for it, and the relationship cannot be salvaged, and the breakup is inevitable, this kind of conversation can help to make the breakup less acrimonious and to prevent a long, drawn-out divorce court case. With communication, I mean also your internal communication, the images you create in your mind about your relationship and about your partner and the words that you use in your internal dialogue. Because your internal dialogue and the images stimulate the feelings that you have. The feelings affect your behavior and then also your actions. If you berate your partner in your internal communication, if you call him or her names, if you visualize their behavior in the most damning colors, if you do all that, it will affect your feelings about him or her, and it will affect your behavior toward them. You will build up feelings and a picture about them that will make it even more difficult to reconcile with them and to put your relationship on a better footing. Your external communications, the way you talk or otherwise communicate with your partner, does the same as your internal communication, but it adds to it the feelings that you create in your partner and his, her response. We cannot not communicate. We express our feelings not only with words, but also with our body language, our facial expression, and the, well, let's call it vibrations that we emit. And by doing so, we evoke our partner's response. People in troubled relationships who want to salvage their relationships need to be aware of this, fully aware. They need also to be aware of the fruitlessness of finger pointing and saying that I did everything what is required, but he or she did not. Stick to what you set out to do, namely salvaging your relationship. Continue communication in a way that allows reconciliation to take place. And most importantly, use your communication in such a way that you see your partner as a willing and eager participant in the reconciliation process. There are two possible outcomes. One, it does not work, and the relationship has to come to an end. Assuming that you and your partner have followed my advice about your conversation with one another, you will have arrived at this conclusion during your calm and constructive conversation. Then you would have also settled the when and how questions that usually arise in a calm and constructive way. Two, this outcome is the one when the reconciliation does work and the relationship is salvaged. Congratulate yourself and your partner and be happy. Never, ever, ever go back in your conversations to the stuff that almost brought you apart. This belongs to the past and a chapter of your past that you do not want to visit again, ever. Knowing that relationships are always at risk and knowing that we can use communication to minimize this risk is the first step in the right direction, namely to maintain a meaningful and loving relationship. The second step and the all-deciding one is to put the theory into practice. Communicate active, constructively. Be emotionally open. Say what's on your mind, what you think, and also what you feel. And be happy when your partner does the same. Do not accuse, do not engage in finger-pointing, but help solving an issue. Display your affections in words and in actions. This is very, very important. The more you demonstrate your love, the more you feel love toward your partner. And your partner usually will respond alike. This is in most cases so. However, there may be individuals who are not capable of showing their feelings, or their partners are not responsive to their demonstrations of love. My best advice, see a competent therapist or counselor. Anger, fear, and guilt are the most debilitating feelings you can have. Do away with them. It's difficult to do this alone, but a good therapist can help you with it. Avoid power struggles over sex, family, money, children, spare time, social activities, and everything else. Solve problems in this regard with talks and not with fights. As I said last week, oftentimes these feelings have underlying causes, such as low self-confidence, low self-esteem. A good therapist can help you. Or you could invest $10.95 and buy my book, Life Mastery Book 1, from my website. Verbal communication needs to be constructive, with both partners having a particular outcome in mind. And as I said earlier, both need to agree on the answers to two questions. Where do we want to go in our relationship and how do we do it? The end outcome should be the solution to the problem, whereby the solution is achieved not by hammering one partner into submission, but by mutual agreement. This also means that the conversation cannot end in an argument. And as soon as there are signs appearing that an argument comes near, stop. stop the conversation immediately. Step back, relax, as long as it takes, and if it takes a day or a week, that's fine, and then start again. Don't be afraid of agreeing to disagree, and then step back and relax and start again. It is vitally important to agree not to bring past events, hurts, disappointments, or frustrations into the present. As I said, leave them where they belong, in the past. This sounds quite easy to do, and for some people it is easy. But I know that many have difficulties to have such an important conversation without being overwhelmed with feelings that make the conversation difficult to conduct. And again, seek the help of a facilitator, a mediator, who should be a counselor or a therapist, who sits in and intervenes only when the conversation goes astray, off track, or deteriorates into an argument. You will find that this is money very, very well spent. Last week I mentioned a few main reasons why relationships deteriorate. One was the bad boy reason. A woman meets bad boy who abuses her. Oftentimes the woman comes to see me for advice, has become victimized and sees herself at fault. She is at fault. That's why he hits her or otherwise abuses her. More often than not, the victim wants to know from me what else she possibly could do to become a better partner to her abuser. And the best advice I can give is to call it quits, to send him packing, or to pack up her belongings and run for it. Whatever is easier and most opportune. In by far the most cases, and I'm talking here of perhaps 99 in 100, the bad boy stays bad. He is not going to change, no matter what she does. I have worked with bad boys too, not very often, because most of them see nothing wrong in their behavior. But the very few who really wanted to change very often found it incredibly challenging to do so. That's why my advice from the outset is to end the relationship. The exceptions to the rule that bad boys don't change are just too few. Only when I can talk to both partners and can assess them both can I determine if there's a shimmer of hope. As I said last week, the same can happen also the other way around. Good boy meets bad girl who abuses him. No difference. There's a somewhat different scenario. Bad girl meets bad boy. This has happened only 3 times in my practice, and I tell you about the most glaring example. The bad boy was a hitter, and the bad girl knew how to push his buttons to hit her, and she did push them. He was a fairly wealthy man and met her in a nightclub where she worked. Whenever she behaved in a certain way that made him lose his cool, he beat her up. Once this was done, he was full of remorse and made it up to her by giving her whatever she wanted to have. And she wanted jewelry, designer dresses, designer shoes, anything that was nice and, most importantly, expensive. She was driving a nice Mercedes sports car as a result of one beating. It was either that or the police. And of course he forked out for whatever she wanted. He really loved her, and I believed he did. And he wanted to stay with her, and I believed he did. He did not want to beat her up, and I believe he really meant it. But once his buttons were pushed, he found it impossible to resist. I worked with him for some time, but she sabotaged all his efforts from the start, because once he stopped beating her, she could no longer control him. Weird? Yeah, weird, but true. At one time we thought that he mastered his feelings and actions. He still was a bit shaky, but getting there. And then he stopped seeing me. He missed an appointment, and that was the end of it. I never saw him or her again. Well, sometimes I wonder what happened. I was also talking about uprootedness in the context of a couple leaving the country to make a new start in a different one in order to salvage the relationship. I pointed out that this is a pretty hopeless undertaking because interpersonal problems do not disappear only because people move. On the contrary, they become bigger and there will be more of them. And I told you why. If a couple have problems in their relationship, they need to resolve the problems first, re-establish a sound footing in their relationship and strengthen the bond. If they still want to move on, then they will be fine. This would be different, of course, if the problem is created in their locality, a previous lover, for example, or other people in the family or circle of friends who, for whatever reason, don't want the relationship to flourish. Or it could be that the economic situation has changed, loss of job, loss of income, and the move could mean a new job and a decent income. There are more examples of how problems might occur that impact the couple but are not created by them. These are certainly reasons to move, and the likelihood of the relationship to become loving and meaningful again is very strong in spite of the challenge of uprootedness. I have to have a drink of water. Just give me a second or two. Sorry about that. Back again. But what about relationships that are troubled not because of some very major issues, but something that comes along with time and how life changes over time? What about life-changing circumstances, like, for example, a promotion that propelled one partner in the relationship into a different set of social strata, and the other partner feels excluded because this strata is not his or her scene? What about one developing an interest in politics and standing for local elections, whereas the other one deeply dislikes politics? There are many scenarios of this kind. All of them could be detrimental to the well-being of the relationship. How should they proceed? How should they deal with it? Presuming that the one partner who goes into politics or gets promoted does want to give in to his or her partner's misgivings, there's only one answer. Communicate clearly and without arguing how to tackle the problem. Be understanding, tolerant, and accepting. And this goes for both parties. Communicate with the best possible outcome in mind. The best for both, of course. Needless to say, there has to be compromise, probably plenty of it, but it can be done, provided that both are willing not only to take, but also to give. Keep in mind that there's always a way that can be satisfactory for both. In all relationships, in order to keep them running smoothly, it is important to keep the spark alive. You know what kind of spark I mean, don't you? The spark that was there when you first met, the spark that made you keen to get married, the spark that was there during the first weeks and months when you were married, the days when you were the happiest when you were together, when you regarded time you were not together as time wasted, the days when you could not get enough from one another and could not keep your hands to yourself. Remember those days? Remember the spark? Remember when the spark I'm talking about turned into a flame that set your passion alight? And then it got lost. No one wanted this to happen, but it happened anyway. The relationship settled into a routine, actually a series of routines, and that's not good. Day-to-day life intervened and took over, and that's not good either. The lovemaking in the morning was pushed aside and breakfast was preferred in order to get out of the house and to get to work on time. The animated conversation over breakfast or at the dinner table made place for silence. One had nothing to say to one another. Instead of rushing home after work, they went for drinks with colleagues. I'm sure you recognize the scenario, don't you? What can be done? How often have I said in previous shows, as well in this one, that communication is everything. It is also the key to a happy and healthy relationship. Communicate, communicate, communicate. And this communicate, I mean not only talking, but most importantly, listening to what your partner has to say. Don't come home after work and just talk about what happened to you at the office, but show a keen interest in what your partner wants to tell you. Remove the spotlight from yourself and shine it on your partner. If you cannot communicate in the kitchen or lounge, how are you going to communicate in the bedroom? Talk with your partner about your sex life. Share your sexual fantasies with him or her. If you are dissatisfied with your sex life, perhaps it also has become a routine like a Friday evening session, talk about it. Tell him or her what you would like to do or to get. Be open about it. In most cases, this is sufficient to rekindle the passion. If not, seek the advice of a competent therapist or counselor. Go away for a weekend regularly. If you have children, pass them on to their grandparents or get a sitter. This weekend should be for your fun and for your pleasure only. Both your fun and pleasure, obviously. Sex is essential in most relationships. If your life has become too hectic and all-consuming, step back and make time for sex. Recreate the attraction that you once had for one another. Don't compare your sex life to those of others. Yes, there will be those who tell you that they have sex 7 times a week, but you don't have to feel you have to do the same. Remember, not every couple is the same. If you and your partner try to live up to every other couple you know, you'll exhaust yourself. As your relationship grows, your sex life changes too. As long as you and your partner are happy, stop worrying. Besides, all those couples who brag about still having sex at least twice a day and 7 days a week could be lying. You don't know the ins and outs of their relationship, so it's unrealistic to compare yours to theirs. Just focus on your own sex life and don't worry what others are doing. Make time for each other. Sometimes you may feel there really aren't enough hours in the day to keep everyone happy. Set aside at least 1 hour every night after the kids are in bed to sit with your spouse and then just relax. Spend time just cuddling on the sofa together, perhaps watching your favorite movie or TV show. Just showing that you care enough to make time for each other will make you both happy. You will look forward to your time alone every evening and cherish the time together more. Demonstrate your love and affection in words and action. Tell your partner that you love him or her, but say so not as an aside when leaving home to go to work, but say it so it means something. Your actions do not need to be sex, just a cuddle, a kiss or two or three, showing you love. This year it is 37 years that I'm together with my wife and we have a wonderful, very loving and very meaningful relationship. That's why I know that my advice that I dispense here works very well indeed. Actually, not only because of us, but also because I have counseled, countless couples, and I have achieved successful outcomes with most of them. My wife and I, we have occasional arguments, very, very rarely, but it happens, and that's good. Come to think of it, compared to our early days, they have become very rare indeed. I think this is so because we have learned our boundaries and we have great respect for one another. But every couple argues and there's no shame in it. It only becomes unhealthy when names are called and fists are being thrown. Those things are never acceptable. I have mentioned respect. Without respect, there cannot be a meaningful relationship. Everyone, no matter who they are, what they have done, deserve respect, to be treated as an equal and nothing less. It helps if you have common interest. This is not a major thing, but it does help in a relationship to have something that both of you are interested in, like music or the arts in general or sport or anything really. But don't force your interest on your partner. Love together. However you do it, funny movies, comedy nights, just playing around with family or friends, or just the two of you, you will feel much less stressed. You'll think of your relationship as happier and will be better at overcoming problems that arise, as they inevitably do. Well, there is also loyalty and faithfulness. I do not care what anyone says, this is needed for a good relationship to work. Everyone deserves to have someone who is there for them and only them. It is easy for both to stay faithful and loyal if you follow whatever I'm telling you about keeping your spark alive. Put your heart and soul into the relationship. And if it still doesn't work, you can't say you didn't do your best. Know when to forgive. There may come a time when you will have to decide to forgive. If your partner is unfaithful and you discover it, ask yourself why this was possible. There are a few possibilities. Your partner is not satisfied with his or her life, love life or otherwise, and tries to find fulfillment with someone else. If this is so, ask yourself what you possibly could have done wrong, what you could do better, where you have failed. Be honest with yourself and do not be full of righteousness. You see, I told you in previous shows that your life and most of what happens in your life is your responsibility. Also, it has happened in my practice that only one of the partners in a relationship was at fault for it to become discordant. It has happened, but not often. In most cases, both of them could have done better. Should this be the case with your relationship too, communicate, that is, talk and listen to your partner. If you both find that your relationship can be salvaged, forgive. Sort out whatever went wrong and forgive. Yes, you will feel hurt, disappointed, and insulted, but then visualize your partner's good points, how you used to be together, the love that you once had for one another and probably still have. Visualize as if it was still so. See this in the most glorious colors and resolve that everything will be again as it once was. Once you have reached the point of forgiveness, let the bygone be bygone. It's over. It also belongs to the past, and you leave it there. Another possibility is that your partner is on a business trip and a one-night stand occurs, and you find out about it. What do you do? There's nothing else wrong in your relationship. It was just the one opportunity. Perhaps your partner was tipsy. Ask yourself, if this is so important that you give up and chuck it in and go and consult a divorce attorney. If you feel that way, and even if you feel the same once you have visualized your partner being at his or her best, even if you feel the same 2 or 3 weeks later, even if your partner is full of remorse, if all this does not help and you feel that by forgiving you will destroy your life, even if you saw a good therapist and a counselor, well, then the relationship is probably not salvageable, and you better go and consult with this divorce attorney. And then there's the worst possibility, which is that your partner has fallen for another one, head over heel, and he or she wants a divorce no matter what. That's the end. You want to stay in the relationship and you are prepared to forgive and forget, but your partner does not want to know. In this case, my advice is give up. Let him or her go. Settle your affairs as amicably as possible and move on. In spite of what I just said, have trust in your partner. Without trust, there cannot be a meaningful and good relationship. Never, never assume the worst of your partner. Never spy on him or her. Never check his or her wallet or credit card statements for suspicious tickets, unless it is really warranted. In my relationship with my wife, we praise one another for things that either of us does well. Praise is so easy to give, and it's such a great gift. Even if I know full well when I did something very well, it feels wonderful when my wife says so too. I have mentioned love, sex, respect, trust, and forgiveness so far. Very important is also equality. No one dominates the other. There should also be no gender-specific chores, unless both partners would have it that way. Avoid taking each other for granted. One of the disadvantages of a long-term relationship is the fact that lovers start to take each other for granted. They assume they know their partner's likes and dislikes, and they end up making a lot of assumptions, which can be critically wrong at times. But this can be easily solved with good communications. Remember, talking and listening. The worst part of taking each other for granted is the assumption that this is forever and cannot change. However, it can change, and it will change most certainly when you take your partner for granted. Be willing to apologize. At times, you may just not want to apologize. You may be convinced that it's not your fault and you don't see any reason in humiliating yourself by offering an apology. But that's where you are wrong. What are you trying to prove after a fight? That you're right and your partner is wrong? What's the benefit of that? Do you want to show off that you're right again? Does it even matter who's wrong or right when your partner is sad and upset? In a relationship, there are no winners or losers. There are just happy couples or unhappy couples. If you want to know how to be happy in a relationship, learn to swallow your pride and apologize, even if it's not your fault. It's for the sake of your relationship. Egos destroy relationships, and both partners have to learn to apologize to each other, even if it's not their own fault. Get rid of the ego, and you'll see how successful and happy your relationship can be. Ask yourself, how do you show your partner that you really care? Could your relationship benefit from some added effort on your part? If so, decide what you like to create a more loving feeling. Then take a deep breath and put your plan for making love into action. If you don't do it already, you could start with little things, such as clasp hands when you're crossing a street or walking through a crowd. Wrap your arms around your partner when you're standing close to each other. And don't keep more than a foot's distance between each other unless you have no choice. Look into your partner's eyes and say, I love you. Say it as if you mean it, without trying to be funny or sounding corny. I believe that if you follow these steps, your relationship will go into the right direction. It might even save you unnecessary arguments or hurt feelings in the long run. A relationship is not the easiest thing in the world, but it's not the hardest either. There will be times where it is so hard that you might want to leave. But if it is right, there will be always something that will stop you. After all the drama and tears, you may come to realize that your partner is the one for you. And that's a good point where we could end our talk. Thank you for listening. Go to my website, mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. There you'll find my email address and then write to me. Tell me what you think about this program. Give me comments and suggestions and ask any questions you like. If you have a problem you want to hear my opinion about, tell me about it. I will answer any emails within 48 hours. For now, I leave you with words by Henry Miller, and I quote, "The one thing we can never get enough of is love. And the one thing we never give enough is love." Unquote. Tune in again next week, same day, same time. Goodbye. Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of